Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Kat Osborne. Today, we're continuing the discussion from 2 weeks ago, our annual Guide to Geek Gifting. We'll also plan to discuss the worst corporate hack in history, a bill to ban FBI backdoors, and of course, take your questions and comments and emails today. Join the discussion on our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, or call now 800-456-0766. You can email your suggestions to our guests today, Joel Brovelite, John T. Meyer, and Jeff Lederich. That email address is midday@sdpb.org. Stay tuned, and we'll talk tech gifting and more after this news from member-supported SDPB Radio. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio on this early December. Welcome, everyone, and of course, welcome the guys in the studio here. We have Joel Brovelite with us today. Hello, Joel.
Howdy.
John T. Meyer from Lemonly is...
happy to be here.
Again, happy to be here as well. And Jeff Lederich from the Bureau in... can I just say the Bureau? Do I have to call it the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications?
The Bureau is way cooler, yeah.
Jeff, you sound really cool when I just say...
I think the Bureau is okay, so...
Jeff's here from the Bureau. And they're here to take your questions, your comments today. We didn't quite make it through everything from the last show. So, you know, we covered a lot of things last time. We did TVs and DSLRs a little bit and headphones. And we really didn't get into the gaming systems. We got into it a little bit, but Jeff had to leave a little early and we didn't really get into games and some other things. So we figured, yeah, we'll just, continue on since we've got... John today that we didn't have 2 weeks ago, and we haven't heard any of his picks, so maybe he's got some to share with
us. Call me Santa's elf, pretty much.
So Santa's elf is here, and so we're just going to continue that discussion. We have a lot of other news we want to get to today as well. There's other things going on. I'm going to start this off, Jeff. Sony, they're calling it the worst corporate hack in history. So what's the Korean?
Yes.
Yeah. So what's the Korean angle on this whole thing?
North Korea.
North Korea. Yeah.
There's two.
Here's what they think is happening, and no one knows for sure yet. That, you know, at least in the public, is if you remember Seth Rogen and his crew that did quite a few movies together. They're doing a movie that actually is about assassination of the North Korean, and I'm not sure what he's called, chairman or president, the leader of North Korea. They're actually releasing a movie that North Korea doesn't like because it talks about them interviewing the leader of North Korea and assassinating him. I'm starting to see trailer ads and stuff for that out. So what they think has happened is North Korea wasn't happy with it, so they actually put in a destructive. Now, we talk about a lot of, you know, credit card heists and stuff like that, where people steal stuff from different companies' data because it's worth money. In this case, they stole a lot of data, but at the end of that, they also had the malware wipe and destroy all the data in Sony's pictures divisions. Actually have released this. Been on BitTorrent, new movies that are not in theaters yet. They got movies, they got financial records, they got social security numbers, they got internal financial and employee personal documents. They basically took everything Sony Pictures and just that division, Sony Pictures, had that makes the films and stole it and then destroyed it. So, now, that doesn't mean they destroyed backups and stuff like that, so it's not like the data is permanently lost, but Sony Pictures is not having a good week or month this month.
Yeah, it's 100 terabytes is what the hackers actually said they stole. So apparently there's communication with the folks that have done this, and from the combing through of about 40 gigabytes of that, again, as you mentioned, medical records, unreleased scripts. Yeah, this is not good. There isn't anything with the
four movies that aren't on theaters yet. Now you can download and view, and at least probably maybe not in the United States, but that will impact, you know, international sales in those movies too. It's going to be a big financial hurt for Sony Pictures.
Okay, well, that's certainly censorship one way to do it.
Saw in 60 Minutes last Sunday, they did a big story about just kind of cyber hacking in general. And they talked about, you know, obviously the Target and the Home Depot are the biggest kind of brand names in the retail space. This guy, this expert in cybersecurity, said that 97% of retailers have been compromised already, meaning at some point some sort of information has been compromised or hacked. And so what they're trying to, and they were, the guy, the interviewer on CBS is like, 97%? So you're saying that security doesn't even exist? And the guy's like, pretty much.
And there's a new interesting study I'll mention here briefly, but I just want to get one more back, why they think it's North Korea and why the evidence points to that. It's because a similar attack using almost the exact same malware was used to get South Korea, and that was traced back to North Korea back in July last summer. So if you go back in the news stories, there's a big hack of South Korea's government and industrial computer systems. Same malware, same pattern, same MO, everything of the Sony Pictures hack. One other thing I'll point out kind of into that 97% is there was a study release that security scientists did, and we have all, you know, gone out to those websites with the little logos that say we're secure, and they actually pay, those websites pay a lot of money for their websites to be scanned and checked to, so that they could certify those little seals on there saying we're secure. Well, the scientists actually found that those sites are actually less secure than the sites without the seals. In practical, when they were doing testing and analysis, statistical analysis of break-ins and stuff. So even those little, you know, symbols where, you know, we're doing everything right, doesn't mean that they are truly secure.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can post or paste, you know, images on websites, and certainly that doesn't mean that they're safe. That's troubling, I guess. 97%.
I mean, I think... Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be something we're going to continue to hear about in the new year. But I also think it's almost a dance. It goes back and forth between security catching up, and the other guy's point in the story was that we are still using credit card technology that we use today, and we've talked about this on the show, is from the 80s, you know, 70s and 80s, and so a lot of it is we just need to catch up. And
yeah, or just, I mean, clearly we need to catch up, and all of that's true, but. To think that, well, at some point we're going to catch up and there won't be any more big hacks.
Oh, and then they'll continue to refine
just not
their
happen.
Approach.
I mean, I mean, people think, well, what are all these things we hear in the new, this is just going to keep happening and it's going to get normal because it's going to be normal.
Cybersecurity has always been, for the, at least the last 20 years I've been in it, an arms race. It's a never-ending. New attacks, new methods come out, new defenses come out to block those. It is truly kind of an arms race. And one thing I'll point out just too, because the credit card thieves themselves, the ones that are attacking the retailers, are becoming more and more aggressive, is there's actually a new way they're monetizing it. Is once they steal your credit cards, they also want your zip code address. So instead of buying online and stuff, they actually send people into your local stores with your stolen credit card information to pick up goods there they purchased online, store pickups, so that it bypasses security. Of course, that means, you know, they know where you, you know, about where you live and stuff when they steal those credit cards. And that's the new kind of method they're using for against detection and stuff, is they're actually having people show up. They're hiring people to show up in person at these stores to pick up the stuff they bought with stolen credit cards.
Hmm. Probably a good reason to guard your identity online. Is it Mugshot Girl, or what was the one that kind of went crazy? The girl posted her mugshot and her arrest thing on Twitter the other day, and everybody, she became the darling of Twitter, because she thought her picture was cute that they took, and then, you know, it's not a bad picture, but everything is there. What she's charged with, her home address, like,
oh, geez,
everything is like right there, and she posted it, you know, and this is a follow up of it was like cute mugshot guy last month that posted his mugshot. He thought he was, you know, kind of a suave looking dude, and I think a lot of people agreed with that, but he put his own mugshot out there on Twitter, and do people just got to stop doing this
something
stuff?
To be proud of, I guess. I don't know. Interesting, but yeah, I definitely think the way that Joel's exactly right. The way that we use our information online and just the behavior and how we use our credit cards needs to change. And checking your statement every month, multiple times a month, that has to be normal now. It can't be like extra precaution or extra steps. It just has to be the way that you use credit cards.
And thinking that it's going to go back at some point, or because somebody's dropping the ball along the way, it's just not true. I mean, it's not because these, you know, the companies that handle our data are negligent. It's just the way it is. It's the same way you wouldn't let your kid, do what I did when I was a kid, you know, go home and I might be 10 and I'm home by myself and I can walk, you know, three blocks to the grocery store and get a can of Coke. You wouldn't let your kid, I wouldn't let my kid do that now. But I used to do that all the time. I mean, that's just the new normal.
There is one new interesting pressure that's going to come on the retailers. If you remember last Christmas season, the whole Target hack, well, the banks actually started to sue Target over their losses, and Target was appealing, saying no, because we met minimum security requirements, we're not responsible and stuff. A federal court actually just over said, no, you are responsible for Target. You can't.
But
be
only
by the
only
bank.
For banks, though. Only for
only
banks.
For the banks.
If any consumers were trying to sue, they cannot sue Target.
Right.
Only banks can.
You have to remember, the consumers can only sue for what they lost. The bank can sue for millions.
Yeah, but
that's a humongous pressure on the retailers.
Sure, but the consumers are no longer able to sue the way I read it. So I think there's probably some politics in that decision. I wonder about how that's actually going to wind up going down. And all the judge said was, you can go ahead with your lawsuit. It didn't actually, you know, rule one way or the other on the lawsuit. It'll probably be, you know, 5, maybe 8 years before we hear the end of that, honestly.
But it starts the process. When companies basically can get fined massive amounts, you'd be surprised how fast the companies improve their security postures.
One last question, and we're going to leave this Sony thing in the dust a little bit. How did the malware get into Sony? Do we know that?
It's the same. Most malware gets in, and what we're going to, I'll explain what we mean by a drive-by attack kind of thing. In this case, it was targeted for Sony. So what they did was they used a couple of methods to get their foothold into the organization using drive-by attacks. And what we mean by that is they planted malware on and broke into sites that Sony employees went to and used, and then planted malware on there so that when you went to the website, you would be infected. They also did targeted email attacks where everyone gets the email, click on this link. Though they were a little bit more sophisticated in that they were more internal, like an email from your boss saying, hey, this financial report is wrong, click on the link to go fix it, I need it for the next meeting. You know, those kind of very more personal target attacks to the work environment. We've announced this on studies before that no matter how much training and stuff you have, about 10% of people still click on those links even though they've been told not to. And you only need the first couple to actually make that first entry into the network. And they had been hacked for a while, and they took their time downloading the data before they executed the delete command. So it wasn't like this all happened within a day's span or something. They slowly got in, they compromised everything, and then they decided to delete all the data at once. So,
you know, that's interesting. And I personally know somebody that got an email said it was from Costco and said, hey, you know, we just shipped your order. You know, it was this dollar amount and this, blah, blah, blah. And they went, I didn't order anything from Costco.
That's actually one of the new big scams going on this year. I mean, we haven't talked about the kind of holiday uptick in malware, but one of the big one of the big attacks people are using is that shipping one. From Costco, from Walmart, from, you know, Amazon. If you're getting emails about shipment stuff, you may want to go to the main website to track your orders. Don't track it through emails you get. That is kind of their big focus on how they're trying to attack people this season.
But I can't even imagine that this person was a Costco member, and they went ahead and clicked on it anyway.
Sure.
And It's just like, just delete them. I mean, you know, yeah, and exactly. I mean, if I get a thing from Amazon that says, "Hey, we just shipped your new Xbox," and I'm an Amazon Prime member, I'm certainly gonna go through my regular routine of going to the Amazon website, logging in, and then checking my account stuff. I'm not gonna take an email, especially to an address that probably isn't, you know, one that I had on the account. There's a red flag right there.
You know, I think you're going to see tech companies get smarter too, trying to create, you know, better email or smarter email or other subscriptions that we can use to filter
that would be
that
nice.
Stuff out.
You know,
I mean,
as a complaint to people who send out those phishing emails, learn how to spoof a logo better, please. Every time I get an email that's trying to get me to do something, I look at it and I go, "Oh, who are you kidding? That does not look like the Walmart logo. Stop it. You know, sure. Use a current one."
Well,
I can't believe
language,
how terrible they are. And
you should be looking at the language, people.
Well, I've seen some really, really good ones.
As a graphic designer, cool, I should definitely be looking at the language.
As the son of an English teacher,
right?
You know better. But anyway, I got an email from a gaming company, and it was beautiful. It had all the things. It had a few odd English sentences.
Always.
But all the other links, the links to their security policy and back to the rating of their website and other things were all right, except for the one that they wanted you to click on to go change your password. And then, you know, you got the long string of, and it had the game name in there somewhere,
sure.
but followed and preceded by a bunch of gobbledygook. And,
so if this is your first time, you know, either listening to our show or using a computer, if you get an email with a link in it, we just recommend you don't click on anything. I don't, so I wouldn't recommend anybody else. It really doesn't matter who it's from, even if it's somebody you think you know. It just is a bad idea. For those of you that are sending out emails, either from companies or just don't put links in your email, please stop doing that. You just make it worse for everybody. I really think that that's the way it's going to go. So just stop.
I feel weird even sending documents and stuff. I've just started pasting my stuff into the body of the message and just saying, here.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make you go click on another thing that takes you to another thing that takes you to another thing.
Totally.
It's goofy. Anyway, we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to touch on a bill in Congress and a new DOJ initiative that actually has to do with online privacy, believe it or not, after this. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. I hope you're being facetious about that.
No, I think we should pose the question.
Yeah. What do people drink with spicy Doritos?
Let's try that again. If you listen to the commercial just now, she asked that question. What do people eat with spicy Doritos? Or drink?
Drink, yeah.
And now we're perplexed and stuff.
Yeah, well, we're perplexed first by the question itself. And second, how you would answer anything but Mountain Dew.
I think the show is going to be something like Pinot Noir or something crazy
with spicy Doritos. Weird.
I'll tell you what, send us just a tweet at SDPB if you want to weigh in on that or anything else we're talking about. We have gathered the experts today, certainly not on beverages, but on a variety of areas that you may have questions about in the tech world. They're here in the studios of KCSD. Joel Brovelight is here, John T. Meyer, and from the Bureau in Pierre, Jeff Litterick. Again, you can call, text, tweet, email, swing by the Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio. Don't be shy. Our phone number, 800-456-0766. At SDPB is the Twitter handle. And our email address, midday, MIDDAY, at SDPB.org. That's probably the most popular thing. So kind of dovetailing into a couple more discussions right off of what we were just talking about, keeping things, I guess, in D.C., the Department of Justice launched a new cyber security unit that's supposedly going to help maintain privacy of us. Jeff, do you know much about that?
You know, I think on the privacy, there's a lot of new stuff going on. For example, in the EU, they're actually trying to split Google up into separate companies for privacy issues and monopoly issues. But mainly privacy issues, and Google's actually been fined a lot. in the United States, we never really had, unlike EU. EU actually has a law about privacy, about individual privacy and the privacy of your data, and that you have a right to be what they call forgotten. Now, you have a right to call up a company and say, delete all my data. And then they have to permanently delete it and not store it or not back it up. We've never had that, and I think at this point, the cat's so far out of the bag that, you know, a privacy, that kind of privacy expectation for us is almost nil, no matter what we do, unless, I mean, even if we implemented new laws today, it would still be, you know, years down the path before the data actually got expurged out. So we'll see how it goes, and we'll see what the recommendations are, but meaningful privacy outside of health records and stuff, I think that's going to be a big political fight, and because big business really wants access to that data for advertising and merchandising, and we'll see how that works in our current political environment.
Well, and speaking of politics, I mean, if you got the head of the FBI, James Comey, you know, requesting, he's saying, okay, this encryption's getting crazy. We need, the FBI needs back doors in all this software and all this hardware so we can get in and basically wiretap, or we can make it easier for the FBI to do that. And then you've got congressmen going and introducing bills to ban that sort of thing. They're saying, okay, we need privacy. There's, you know, if people can't have privacy, what can they have?
There was another article on the NSA here recently off all those leaked documents where they were actually trying to inject security vulnerabilities into cellular networks so that they could always access and hack into any cellular network in the world. I mean, you kind of have the competing interests. And the NSA was weakening encryption that NIST, which is a governmental agency that creates high data encryption standards, was weakening it so that they could break the encryption and read all the data. And NIST was fighting, trying to make it as secure as possible so that no one could read the data, and they were recommending stuff. So there's internal governmental executive agency battles going on here too. So I'm just not hopeful for the near future of any real movement on privacy rights.
Okay. Got an email yesterday, actually, from a listener from far, far away, thanking us for a link that we had on our website quite a while back about talking to kids about being online. And this is a subject we touched on. It's been 3 or 4 years since we've done that. And I thought, and she passed along some other links that went into the FBI of all places. We just talked about them, but other places, and said, hey, thank you. We need to, we really need to continue this discussion with kids. And I thought, you know, we really do. I was at an event last night. There were very small children running around, and parents just seem to be, you know, unlocking their cell phones and giving them to the kids to play with to sort of keep them occupied while they're watching the event. And part of that horrifies me. The other part is really interesting questions for me about kids and technology, but maybe you're a grandparent and maybe you're a little bit worried about the things that kids access online and what they're seeing when they do, and maybe the holidays is a time to talk with the parents about some online resources, about talking to their kids. And so the link that we had out there, it's almost impossible to find, is still very viable, and it's called onguardonline.gov. And we can post that up socially, and yeah, if you can't remember it, we'd love to get that out on their Facebook page. We'll also throw it in the on the blog for today's show at sdpb.org/techradio. Of course, that's where you go for all the show archives, the podcasts, and all those things. But we'll put a link in that post as well for onguardonline.gov, and it talks very specifically about chatting with your kids about being online. And that's maybe the first step in maybe some privacy.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a can of worms to open, especially I'm not a parent, so I have to probably be careful what I say, but I think
I don't know why you would be. Most of the non-parents I know have no problem weighing in on privacy
on
and children.
On raising your child.
As far as I can tell, I think you should jump right in.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say, is I don't know if I'm the appropriate person to answer, but I do think that You know, we always talk to people at, like at Nine Clouds is certainly at some point, and this is not just security, but some sort of etiquette, technology and etiquette needs to be taught. You know, somewhere along the lines, you know, for most of us, we don't answer the phone. If I'm talking to you in this on the street, face-to-face conversation, my phone rings, I'll ignore the call. But for some reason, if I get a text message, many people will continue to text while I'm kind of half pretending, half listening, talking to you. And that became kind of okay. And so this kind of evolution of what's appropriate and what's the right, correct etiquette or not for technology is also an interesting conversation. And I think that one thing, I think, you know, I was taught keyboarding in class at Hillcrest Elementary in Brookings, South Dakota. That class doesn't need to exist anymore. Maybe it doesn't already. But
it does.
Like, these kids will already know how to type, or they won't even need to use a keyboard, because who knows, they'll be using iPads and things that don't hardly use keyboards. But could we teach that instead? Could we teach
You know, John,
technology etiquette?
And I made a joke right before you talked there. I do mean, but you bring up, I think, a broader point in that, you know, because technology is pervasive, I don't think anybody would argue that, and it is everywhere. Not only should we teach our kids how to do that, we have to learn how to teach our kids how to do that. And adults, even if they have no children, need to learn how to interact with each other with these devices. And it's all very acute right now because it's all so new. You know, 5 years ago, we did not sit around this table doing this show with everybody having one or two devices and people, you know, being able to text and do all that. And that was just 5 years ago. You know, your experience of somebody texting while they're talking to you happens to me all the time.
Yep.
And I perpetrate it as much as I see it. You know, you'll be in a checkout line and somebody will be doing something and they're slowing you down. Etiquette is at all levels. And I definitely think that's something that needs to be taught, in lieu of keyboarding, which is going to be learned in every class or should be learned in every class. It behooves parents to learn how to do it.
They're just
going to
know
first.
It. I mean, I'm not a parent, but I'm an uncle to three nieces, and the oldest, who's not yet three, can just pick up her parents' iPad and just work away. And
yeah,
I think
technology moves too fast to make a class. By the time you make a class in something, by the year end of that, it has changed so
much. Yep.
It's a strange thing to do in general.
But I think it's a conversation to have, and I think where maybe you were headed, or I'm guessing what that government website is for, is also a very serious topic when we're talking about even older kids, which is cyberbullying. You know, and I think that's something I've heard from other friends who are parents. That is a very important topic and
very serious
topic.
And I'm sure you've experienced cyberbullying as an adult, seen it, and maybe been victim of it. I think most of us have in one way or another. Certainly, you've seen it if you've ever been on social media of any kind. And that's also, you know, I think as adults we like to think that, you know, we can teach our kids how to do these things. Well, really, everybody needs to learn how to handle these things, whether it's cyberbullying, how to use technology appropriately, when it's appropriate to take pictures and not take pictures, and where to store them. Everybody needs to learn that. It is not, let's teach our kids. It's like, we all need to learn how to do it. It is not an age-specific thing, don't think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, you look at the numbers of the kids, boys and girls that are solicited online sexually, they're staggering. The amount of things that people will ask for if they're in communication with your child, and there's got to be some ground rules there. And you're exactly right. And
but in some ways, our kids, especially the younger ones, are much more savvy about how things work than adults. Adults, we have this filter we run things through in relation to how we grew up, where they don't have that. They don't see a world where, you know, you weren't able to touch the phone and get to the internet. So they're much more savvy about it. You know, we might walk down the street and see a van that kind of creeps us out, and we might go to the other side of the street. They will see a link on your phone and go, well, that's not real. I'm going to go to this other thing. They're much more savvy about it. So trying to impose that thinking on them, that's the real block. We need to impose things on them at their level and their experience. And that's a much harder conversation.
And sometimes we just won't all be on the same page because technology moves too fast. So, like, you know, you took it toward more of the serious topic about, you know, say, sexual predators, but even the way apps are used. Like, a lot of adults think Snapchat is truly just an app that people use for sexting or something like that. And actually, teenagers communicate with Snapchat. They don't even text anymore. Like, email, they don't even know what email is, or they don't have an email address. I mean, maybe outside of the fact that you have to have one to sign up for these things.
Right, and that's the only reason. But that's what they think it is.
You know, Facebook, they're already off of Facebook, you know, so like your mom or your grandma's learning Facebook and she's got it and she loves it now and she's connected to her classmates, but you're not going to find their teenage kids or their, you know, because they're not even on it.
And so voicemails, that'd be another example where, you know, if you're 25 and younger, you haven't checked your voicemail yet. Nor will you. And I hear all the time people my age and around my age is like, did you check your voicemail? I'm like, why did you leave a voicemail? That's what text is for. Leaving a voicemail is weird because it's like I might as well have answered the call. So that rattle on for 2 minutes.
That'll always be a juggling act too because it'll be, you know, I already, like, as someone who works in the technology field, we even joke about this at our office. It's like, I hope I can always be the cool guy who understands technology, but geez. You know, I know how to use Snapchat, but there's like Snapchat stories that my friends and I like don't quite know how to put that together, and it's like confusing me. And now I'm sounding like I'm 67.
There's some range between the Amish and Joel, you know.
I think Joel and I have already been passed.
Oh yeah. Completely.
Okay. All right. So there's, you know, what do you even
call
it?
You're 15 year old.
Yeah. You know, I totally get it, and I don't get it. I mean, I don't see the value. I'm not going to go out and get Snapchat this afternoon. I'm not going to try to figure it out. But my kids are communicating in that way. They're, hey, I got a Snapchat from, you know, so-and-so today. And I'm like.
So the point I'm trying to say is, like, we need to teach and educate, but also try to learn how to understand. Because you can't say to your teenage kid, well, delete Snapchat because you're doing nefarious things.
Right.
But maybe that's how they talk
to
their friends.
You know, it's good you bring that up because that's the real point. Not that you understand how to use Snapchat and not that you make these hard and fast rules. You can't have screen time to do this. You only get an hour, and I don't care whether it's reading or watching videos. Those hard and fast rules just don't work in modern life with computers. What's better is to teach them why you want to make the rules. Okay, I don't want you to use Snapchat to sext. And you just need to say that. You need to say, I don't want you to use Snapchat at all. Well, good luck with that. The first thing you're going to download is Snapchat. Explain to them and teach them the concepts.
If you're taking any article of clothing off to take a picture, don't do that.
It's the concepts. It doesn't matter what device you're using or how many hours you're using. It's the concepts and the morals, if you want to go that way.
Moral compass.
And how you should interact with other people, whether that's online or in person, it's all the same thing. Those are the parts that need to really be looked at and taught, whether it's an adult or a child.
Is there anybody coaching this?
Specifics.
Is there anybody doing this right now?
I'm sure.
There are. I mean, it's like anything else. It's just got to catch up, and it will.
But that was kind of my point with the keyboarding. Like, can we reserve that class to teach about technology etiquette and technology behavior?
Yeah, because although sometimes I wonder,
get to fourth grade and already know how to.
Yeah,
type.
Sometimes I wonder. You know, in the same thing that we just discussed, whether if you put a class on that, if the person teach, I don't know who would teach that.
Sure.
I mean, it'd be probably best off if it was just a group where they all sat and talked. They'd get more done than if you or I. As Kent or Jeff sat in and tried to teach them something,
absolutely,
we'd learn more than they would.
Absolutely.
Promise you.
I agree. And what you're saying is teaching communication and behavior and the way to treat people, because
which is something that's been done for hundreds of years.
Whether you're doing it through FaceTime or true FaceTime, FaceTime the app or FaceTime like me standing next to you right now, you still treat people the same way.
Getting back to your original point, yeah, put the phone down. If we're talking. You know, just it's amazing. Go to a restaurant sometime, and everybody's sitting quietly, looking at their device instead of talking and breaking bread and having fun. And
a good
whatever.
Tip if you are out with friends, the one that I know some people will do, and this isn't really talking about kids now, but say there's, you know, a group of four people, six, ten, whatever friends, and you're out for dinner, and you all put your phones in the middle, put them face down, and the first person to go for it to grab it, they're the one that picks up the tab.
I've done that, and it works.
Did you win? or did you cave and pay for the tab?
I paid for the tab. But, so you caved. But I did not go for my phone, though. But it was just because I was the dad, you know. It was my it was my duty to do that amongst all the kids.
Yeah, I'm not all in on that where, you know, I go into a restaurant and I see a bunch of people with phones and stuff like that. And I go, oh, boy, I wish it was, you know, way back when nobody used phones. If using your phone is what you enjoy, I mean, you go to this restaurant and you pay $100 for your family to eat. You know, I'm going to get my phone out and watch a movie. I don't want you judging me. And I'm not saying that I do that, but maybe I would. It's, you know, it's my money and it's my enjoyment time. True. And I'm going to use it how I want. I think judgment on how people use devices is both pervasive and ridiculous. So that's what I have to say about that.
I'm just saying
John T's course in etiquette. I'm saying.
Yeah. I just think I'm gonna make a judgment about how you value my time if we're trying to have a conversation.
Well, that's a whole different deal. You know, if the server comes to my table and I'm not ready for them, that's another thing entirely.
Sure, and yeah.
Yep. I'm just saying that if you're next to me and you're shaking your head at me while I'm checking sports scores.
I do that myself.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that.
Not the judgment part.
If you're coming at me in an automobile and you're checking your sports scores and I'm on my motorcycle, I've got a problem with that.
Entirely different thing. That goes back to the first thing where you're talking about, you know, how to interact with people and technology. But if you're talking enjoyment time or pleasure time, and you know what I guess my point with this is what I dislike is when people say, well, I don't let my family use any screens when we're at dinner. I don't let them use any at home or any on Sundays or any on whatever. That goes back to the same first rule where, well, if what you want is family time, then teach that. Don't think that because there are no screens that all of a sudden the conversation is going to be good. That's not what really happens. All you did was just make an arbitrary rule based on something that you wish that everybody would do, which doesn't make that happen. The point where people need to take care and be responsible and interact with people on a personal level, that's the same that it's been for 100 years. That's no different. Whether it's texting and driving and eating a Big Mac and driving, you need to be safe. That's all the same thing.
Yeah.
The same thing, is it?
We'll discuss the – yeah. Well, it is the same thing.
Thank you. But we'll just go on from there.
We've still got some things to talk about. We're not going to talk about it right now. We're going to go on to a break here. And when we come back, we've got, believe it or not, more things to talk about. When we're going to talk about some gifting and I don't know, Gangnam Style almost broke YouTube. Or that rewrite something. Maybe some lighter topics in the next segment after this. And welcome back to Dakota Midday Tech Radio. A reminder, we've got a show in 2 weeks, December 19th. And then again on January 2nd, 2 weeks after that, we're going to tell you all about how to hook up those things you got on Christmas.
Or return them.
Or how to return them. You know, it is amazing to me. And that what's weird is that being a technology guy, if I got a new piece of technology, that's like the first thing I open up. And for some people, it's like the last thing they open up. They're like, oh, I'm going to.
Then that person got gifted incorrectly.
To all of us, we did. But, you know, other people are like, oh, geez, I just don't have time to.
Besides
you know,
your Black
set
Friday.
My new Nook up or my whatever.
Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Isn't there a term for like the 26th, too? Like for returning things?
Boxing Day?
That's like Canada.
Or several other crown countries, but yeah.
Well, that
regifting day? I don't know.
There's something. There's got to be something.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know what it is. I'm only answering because.
Or because I think there's deals on that day too.
There's deals on every day, isn't there? Well. Isn't it Black 3 months Day? Isn't that really what it is? All 3 months. Every day for the past 10 days, I've gotten a Black Friday email or a Cyber Monday email. I'm like, they're both over, guys.
Cyber Week now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the sale after Christmas is the go buy your Christmas decorations for next year day.
Jeez.
I highly recommend waiting 7 days after Christmas to buy Christmas decorations for the next year. That's the best day.
Is it?
In my opinion.
All right. Well, thank you. Something I thought was kind of a chuckle this morning I heard Peter Siegel talk about on NPR was the video Gangnam Style, which
yes.
I think everybody's pretty much sick of, but apparently not because it had like 2.1 billion views on YouTube and like broke the counter or something.
Yeah, I didn't read that whole story, but I don't know if it was a decimal type of thing or a...
It was an integer. The original site was programmed that the number of views was just a 32-bit integer, and he basically surpassed what a 32-bit integer can hold. So they actually had to migrate the entire site to 64-bit integers for all the numbers and stuff now, so that stuff wouldn't display very weird, because he would have gone back to zero views once he rolled over. So,
and just to be clear, if you didn't hear this, it's Gangnam Style, which is the video that was put out, I think, maybe even 2 years ago.
I think already.
Yeah, yep. by the South Korean pop star
Psy,
which is super popular. Maybe in the past, maybe about a year and a half ago to a year ago. That was when it was big over here. So, that's the story we're talking about.
So for the nerds in us, now the hit counter goes up to...
It's pretty cool to say you broke YouTube.
9 quintillion.
Or we're going to break the YouTube.
The count now goes up to 9 quintillion.
Although Wired has a story that they posted right after Peter Sagal mentioned that. And it wasn't Peter Sagal, because he's the wait, don't tell me. Robert Siegel.
Robert Siegel, sorry.
There you go. That in fact, it did not break YouTube. That it was, anyway, we can link to that Wired story, but there's some discussion about that.
A quintillion, by the way, is a quintillion is one followed by 18 zeros. So
there you go.
Apparently that's the next notch up. So did you say they went from 32 to 64, Jeff?
Yep.
And
they did it before anything broke. They knew this was coming up, but it was still kind of a surprise, because the guys who did the original code could not believe anyone would ever view anything that many times.
Well, they've apparently not seen the refresh button, or a 7-year-old with the refresh button. They need to come to my house.
Yeah, what is it? Frozen going to beat that? Is that probably the one?
Yes. So everybody should go out and watch Gangnam Style just to rack him up some more views. He probably needs a couple.
Oh, he could retire on that one song.
I think he could now. Yeah, without a doubt.
All right. And I don't recommend you go out and watch it, by the way.
I think it's fabulous. I love that song and the video.
There are a few other stories out on the internet that link to songs that have come along since then, like What Does the Fox Say? And then there's another one that's like since that. It's the
Harlem Shake, maybe?
No, there's that in there, but there's a bird song out, or a tweeting song out now. That is a Japanese release thing. That's the new Gangnam Style. Song. So we, believe it or not, are whiling away the show here and not talking about gifting, and we need to talk about that a little bit. Jeff, in particular, you had to leave a little early last time, and I know you had some gaming picks for folks, and since I'm all about games and having fun, let's hit some of your list right now.
Yeah, let's start at the beginning again. And most of these games are on all consoles and PC, so it doesn't really matter what platform you want to run these on. But if you like fun shooters and especially comedy, I highly recommend the Borderlands game that just came out, Borderlands the pre-sequel. It's just a blast to play and quite funny. Of course, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare is out and has been out. There's a new humongous RPG that had just come out called Dragon Age: The Inquisition. Getting rave reviews. It is more for adult content. I wouldn't get kids playing it, but that's going to be a very big game this season. So outside of that and just expansions for current MMO and stuff, it's been kind of a quiet season. The Halo series was re-released for the Xbox One, if you really like Halo, with updated graphics and especially high-res cutscenes, called the Master Chief Collection. That, for anyone who loves Halo, that's the thing to get them. So the big issue really now is the Xbox One and PS4 sales going on, which should be interesting to see as we get even closer, because there's more and more discounts coming to sell the consoles. So the new consoles war is kind of heating up a little bit this year.
Is there a dividing line? I mean, so if you've had an Xbox, you're just going to go out and buy the Xbox, or if you've had a PlayStation, you're just going to stay in that same vein so that your account stays the same and the games stay the same, or is there other reasons to jump ship?
It used to be that, and this is still true of the Nintendo and the Wii U, is each manufacturer had their exclusive games that people really like. Like Halo is just Xbox. Now, and then PlayStation had their versions. Anymore, especially since there has not been a new Halo out outside of the re-release of the anniversary editions, is that it really doesn't matter right now. Almost every good game, every A-list game is on PC, Xbox One, and PS4. It really doesn't matter anymore. It's more a matter of personal preference. And just looking at the PS4 sales numbers, we know they stole a lot of Microsoft people. PS4 is kind of leading. They just had the better product for the past year in the console. So, but Xbox One has caught up, and they're both pretty equal now.
Hmm. Also, voiceless from 2 weeks ago was John T. Meyer. John, what are you stuffing stockings with this year for people?
So, I think I said this a little bit last year, but I'm much more on a kick of not having physical stuff in my life. Living a little bit more of a kind of a minimalist lifestyle. And this isn't to say that I'm like going Grinch and say no one should get Christmas presents.
Okay.
I'm very much into online subscriptions. Things like a great gift for this year, I think, is a subscription to Spotify. And actually, if you've never been a Spotify, the music players, music service where you can stream all your music, if you've never been a Spotify member or done any type of promo, they have a deal going on right now where the first 3 months are 99 cents. So just buy that for everybody. 99 cents for 3 months of Spotify if they don't already have it. Otherwise, it's $9.99 a month. And what the premium subscription gets you is no ads. You can listen offline.
For those of the people that maybe are listening and don't know what Spotify is.
Yeah, I said that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you were listening.
I was listening. I totally was listening. I just wanted to be clear that it allows you to listen to any kind of music.
Online, except Taylor Swift.
Except a few artists, but any genre of music.
Yep.
Whatever you like, it would work for anyone. So yeah.
Yep. So what Pandora is to like random, like radio, you choose a channel and Pandora randomly plays you a song and you can have a few skips. Spotify, you just type in a song like a jukebox, like the biggest jukebox you can find, and it'll play it for you.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
And
service.
So $9.99 a month, normally they have a deal for 99 cents for those first 3 months. This last year, I joined for Christmas last year. I got a subscription to Audible. Audible.com is a company that was purchased by Amazon, and it's for audiobooks. Now, if you know anything about audiobooks, they're really expensive and kind of awkwardly expensive. And so for Audible, I mean, sometimes a $25, a normal $10 book is $29 on Audible. So it's a $15 a month subscription. You get one credit. So one credit is like for one book a month. So you can just listen to books. And I listen to books when I do long car rides, commutes, if I walk to work ever. I love it. And so I think I've probably doubled or maybe tripled the amount of books I read this year, thanks to Audible. So I like that, $15 a month. So all these are gifts where you don't have to even physically give them something. You can give them an email in their inbox.
It's like the gift of knowledge kind of a thing. I love your suggestion because I've thought of this year as well. Besides a gift card, what kind of service could I give them? What, and you're specifically speaking for an online service, which is great. And I think a lot of people could make use of that. There are probably some that the cost is restrictive and would, or it's limited by a free version rather than a paid in the Spotify thing. You know, they're listening to commercials has the service improved in that? I left them a while back and went back to Pandora.
I think Spotify is great. I mean, yeah. I haven't had any frustrations other than commercials, so that's why I would upgrade to pay.
Hmm. Well, I'm a Pandora One.
Sure.
And that's about $3 a month, I think.
Okay.
And but you're right. It's more of a pick a channel or pick an artist, and you're going to hear that. It's more like a radio station.
Yep.
What I loved about Spotify was I pick an artist, and then all of a sudden I've got similar artists as well, or I've found stuff from that artist's collaborations that I never knew existed. with other bands, and then I could go check out other bands that I've never heard of, and that really turned me on to other people. It was like it turned into a chain listening reaction.
Yeah, it really depends on whether you use Spotify or Pandora, which are both streaming services.
Yep.
Two of many, by the way. It really depends on the type of listener you are. If you're the type of person that wants to listen to a type of music and maybe likes to discover new stuff, although I don't think anybody would say I don't like to discover new stuff, but if they're honest with themselves, they would realize they probably don't. But if you're that, then Pandora is probably right for you. Spotify is for people who probably have very specific tastes or music that they want to listen to. I would be more in the latter.
And Spotify does have what you're experiencing at Pandora too, radio stations. Like, yeah, you choose a playlist called Coffee Shop, and they,
right,
give you kind of like coffee shop chill.
Yeah, sure. I think there's no doubt that Spotify is probably the superior service of all of them out there,
so,
I would say.
I like those type of things. I'll throw out a random one for you. If you have a foodie person in your life, this is a little bit more regional. A really cool little startup called shipanddip.com. They'll send you a monthly curated box of condiments, like kind of gourmet mustards or cool little spices, rubs for your meat.
Neat.
Shipanddip.com. It's like $25 a month.
Very cool. That is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank our guests, John T. Meyer, Joel Grovelite, and from the Bureau, Jeff Litterick. Join us again in 2 weeks. We're going to continue this discussion and more on December 19th. Join us then. From everybody at South Dakota Public Broadcasting, have a safe and great weekend, everybody.